If you'll please turn in your Bible, and there is a Bible in each pew if you forgot yours today. If you will turn to Matthew chapter 27, verses 15 through 31, we will read together. Now it was the governor's custom at the feast to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. At that time they had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called the Christ?" For he knew it was out of envy that they had handed Jesus over to him. While Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message: "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and to have Jesus executed. Which one of the two do you want me to release to you?" asked the governor. "Barabbas," they answered. "What shall I do then with Jesus, who is called Christ?" Pilate asked. They all answered, "Crucify him." "Why, what crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him."
When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. "I am innocent of this man's blood," he said. "It is your responsibility." All the people answered, "Let his blood be on us and on our children." Then he released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him, and then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand and knelt in front of him and mocked him. "Hail, King of the Jews," they said. They spit on him and took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. After they had mocked him, they took off the robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him away to crucify him. This ends the reading of the word.
My name is Barabbas. It is a Hebrew name, you know, which means son of my father. Very Jewish, isn't it? This idea of the continuity of generations, one after the other, fathers to their sons. Well, despite my Jewish name and my Jewish heritage, I'm really not very much into this idea of Jewishness, you know. I'm frankly bored with the long discussions that the rabbis have about the meaning of the law and all the endless talk about the different holidays. Frankly, most of those holidays are just a little bit more to me than an excuse to have a rowdy good time. Oh, my father used to explain all this was intended to prepare for the coming of the Messiah. And I remember him reading long passages from the prophets. He would get tears in his eyes when he would talk about Yeshua. Oh, it's all very sentimental, but it didn't mean very much to me. The one part about being Jewish that caught my fancy just a bit, however, is this anti-Roman part. The notion of a Jewish homeland warms up in my mind when I equate it with the idea of getting rid of those Romans, those pompous Romans who take our taxes and live too well on them. I suppose you'd say that I'd identify myself with the terrorist movement, that liberation front organization seeking a Jewish homeland owned and operated by Jews. There's some incredibly committed people in the movement, you know, and they've got amazing organization and amazing commitment. There's few people in our country that have got the verve and the intensity of those zealots. And I must say, they're really a very self-sacrificing lot. But if I'm really honest with you, the whole zealot movement is really just a colorful pretense which has allowed me to live the sort of life I rather like. You see, the movement has created the kind of atmosphere where looting and robbery in the name of funding our terrorist movements is justified. And the bottom line, I will have to tell you, is that I'm more concerned about my own financial remuneration than I am about the movement. But still, I enjoyed the image of the political zealot. I became something of a folk hero, you see. I've even been called a notorious criminal. I suppose I've become a kind of symbol of the aspirations of all those poor blokes who try and eke out some meager kind of living under the shadow of the Roman governor. It was kind of fun, actually. They even took to writing Free Barabbas on the sides of buildings and on their carts and wagons in the marketplace. But more recently, I'm afraid that my fortunes have changed. Oh, the crowd will go with you as long as you don't do something to upset their sense of justice. But on one recent operation, we were seeking to unburden some very wealthy Jewish merchant from some of his possessions late at night. We were, of course, going to use the money to advance the cause of the movement, but the man was a little unsympathetic, and he put up a bit of a row, during which it was necessary to use a little force on him. Well, in fact, he ended up dead, and I ended up in a Roman prison. You know, I've always been very amused at the fact that the Romans and the Jews never get along except in this matter of prisons. It seems as though the Jewish people are altogether too happy to let the Romans run their prisons for them. In fact, it's kind of the way, if you think about it, the Romans have been so astute in running their whole empire. They keep control of the system of law enforcement and prisons. So anyway, the good sons of my father Abraham turned against me with real brutality and turned me over to Pilate, who was altogether too happy to get another troublesome problem spot off of his streets. I can understand why the threat of Roman imprisonment has always been so fearful to the people the Romans have conquered. The squalor of that dungeon underneath the Praetorium was absolutely beyond words. There was maybe 25 or 30 of us down there. It was so dark that you couldn't even see your hand 2 feet in front of your face. It was so dank and cold that people were constantly getting pneumonia. The only water was in the middle of the cell, and as we tried to grasp our way to it, we would discover that the water smelled so rancid and tasted worse. The stench was so great that when the guards would come down to give us a few scraps of food every day, they'd cover their mouths and noses with cloths to breathe through. And to make matters worse, the place was so damp and cold that it never saw even one shaft of sunlight. They gave us no blankets. And the only place that was ours was a few feet of slab, cold slab, on the floor. Oh, I suppose I was able to get on better than most down there because my reputation, you see, had preceded me, and frankly, most of the other prisoners were a little intimidated by me. Well, you really usually couldn't hear very much of what was going on up above the dungeon, except when some really loud commotion was taking place. So we all took note when we heard a crowd shouting earlier today up above. I knew it was right around Passover because I counted back to earlier in the week when I was put in the prison. And I knew that at feast times the people got really worked up and the Romans had to introduce extra police into the city in order to manage the crowds and the influx into the city. So my mind kept racing back as to what they could be yelling about up there. Everyone in the dungeon got real quiet so we could try and make out the words. It sounded like some sort of chant, like something that you would hear at an athletic contest. They kept saying the same thing over and over again, and then we heard the words, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Well, I didn't need to ask who they were calling to be crucified. I knew right away it was me they were yelling about. Because earlier, when the guards had come down with the food that day, they had snarled at me that the Sanhedrin, which had met with Pilate, was determining the time of my execution, and the crowd had really turned ugly against me. Those no good priests and scribes, all they do is sit around and coy the favor of the Romans, using the people as some pawns in a chess game that they're playing, and then they go and stir up the people to deliver the sort of mandate to Pilate concerning some trumped up issue by which they exercise their religious superiority. I don't mind telling you, I was plenty scared. I know what execution by the Romans can mean. They would weaken you with brutal scourging. They would take a whip that was filled with bits of stone and glass, and they would lay it against your back until you passed out from either pain or loss of blood. And then they would make you carry on your own bloody back the timbers that they were going to hang you on. And when you reached Golgotha, you would see those who preceded you where you were going to die. And lined up one right after another, a long row, they seemed to go on forever. And they'd be crying or whimpering or despondent in various efforts to protest their situation. I could never figure out why sometimes they would nail your hands to the cross beam and sometimes they would just tie them. It seems as though they saved the nails for those they especially favored. Sometimes the prisoner would struggle and the guards would have to hold him down. Sometimes you would just be quaking with fear. And then they would lift you up on the weight of your body against the nails, would become like 1,000 pounds against your shoulder sockets as they dropped it into the ground. And with an awful thud, it would rip and tear at your guts. And then would begin the incredible struggle to take every breath as you would have to push up on the nails on your feet in order to get enough room for your diaphragm to take in any air. I know a lot about mobs. There's a kind of group emotion that takes over. The crowd develops a mind all its own, apart from any individual, and the chief priests develop the fine art of whipping up the crowd to do what they want them to do. "Crucify him! Crucify him!" they were yelling. You can't imagine the fear that goes through you when you know they're yelling that about you. And so when the dungeon doors opened and I heard the clanging of the Roman guards' armor as they banged down the steps, I began to sweat, even though it was damp and cold down there. "Barabbas!" they yelled out. And like an animal that fights for every last moment of its life, I went and hid in the corner, determining to let them find me through the darkness. They shuffled their way through the other prisoners, grabbing each one and holding them close to their faces to see. "Barabbas!" they hissed when they found me. "You tired old robber, we've come for you." Half dragging my feet, half walking, half crawling, I stumbled up the stairs with them. They were laughing and jeering at me. They asked if I was anticipating the feel of the lash against my back. When we reached the heavy door at the top of the steps, they pushed it open and shoved me into the sunlight, which seared and burned at my eyes. And in the blindness of the morning sun, they pushed me away and they said, "We wish we could take the lash to you, but Pilate has released you." I was totally disoriented. My eyes were killing me. My mind was reeling. Released? Released? What do they mean? I was sure I was going to be tortured and executed that day, so I couldn't understand what they were saying. But they were gone, and I was standing there gradually trying to get used to the sunlight again. The door of the prison was on the back side of the praetorium, and so when I heard again the sound coming from around the front side, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" I instinctively thought that they were talking about me, and I turned to run the other way, and I ran right into a mob of my old friends. "Barabbas!" they yelled gleefully. "So Pilate has released you, you old dog! You quite literally got away with murder, didn't you?" I sputtered, I Come on now, they said, let's go around to the front and join the fun. Tonight we'll have a big party in your honor to celebrate your release. Release? Release? That word kept going through my mind. Me released? And then it hit me. Yes, of course. This was that silly Jewish custom that had grown up around the Passover feast. Every year, as a fake gesture of graciousness and kindness, the Roman governor would release one prisoner at the choice of the crowd that had come for the Jewish holiday. Wait, I yelled to the crowd, tell me what has happened. How did this come about? Why me? All right, Barabbas, I'll explain it to you, said one of my friends. You remember that rabbi from Galilee named Jesus who we watched come into town a few days ago? The one who they said was a great prophet? In fact, some say that he was the Messiah. Well, apparently the priests found his claims to be a bit heretical and blasphemous. I think they found his popularity a bit threatening as well and annoying. And so yesterday they called together several of the merchants and the key leaders of the city for a breakfast prayer meeting. And they explained that Jesus' untimely appearance in Jerusalem was endangering the stability of the Jewish-Roman alliance. And that if his popularity continued to climb, the Romans would be threatened and that they would take away both our place and our nation. And then another one of my friends spoke up. But at that meeting, Caiaphas, who you may remember as the high priest this year, said that the situation could be easily resolved and turned to everyone's benefit if Jesus could just be disposed of, not by the leaders, mind you, but by the crowd. He said it would be expedient if we could focus Jewish hatred on this wayward rabbi in such a way that the whole city would be united. And this would turn a potentially disunifying situation into one that would actually bring everyone together. And so everyone then agreed to use their influence to get the crowd to demand that Jesus be crucified. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It was this Jesus whom they were going to crucify that day, not me. And then another one of my friends spoke. Pilate played right into our hands by coming before the crowd and asking, "Who do you want me to release for you, Barabbas or Jesus?" Pilate actually looked pretty silly up there on the Praetorian porch. He seemed confused and really didn't know what to do. Someone told me that they'd heard that the old boy actually had a soft spot in his heart for this Jesus, and he didn't want to execute him. But he thought that the scribes and the Pharisees were envious of him. And then apparently his wife had had a bad dream last night and said, "Don't have anything to do with this man." Well, while all this explaining was going on, it was hitting me full in the face that I was free. It was really amazing. I wasn't going to be killed after all. But instead of the jubilation that you'd think I'd experienced, there was a kind of strange pall over my whole feelings about it all. I was lost in my own thoughts for a few seconds, and then another one in the crowd spoke up. "You really missed a pathetic sight," he said, "when Pilate took the wash basin and actually performed the old rite of the law." What rite, I had to say, forgetting my law. "Well, you remember," he said, "the one where the elders of the city, when there's a murder been committed in the city, take a wash basin and wash their hands in front of the whole crowd so as to cleanse themselves from any potential wrongdoing in connection with the murder." Apparently, Pilate is supposed to administer justice in the land, and he was using the Jewish rite to communicate to Jewish people that he was innocent. "Yes," said another one. "But you have the feeling that he didn't believe that this Jesus was guilty of anything." "Yes," another one said. "But the bottom line for Pilate is that he saw a riot was starting, and he thought he better appease the crowd." "What happened then?" I asked. One of them said, "Well, I think at that point we were all yelling out something like, 'His blood be on us and on our children.'" Chill went through me. I know enough about crowds to know how ruthless and ugly they can be. I knew that that day it was either Jesus or me who was going to take that walk out to Skull Hill with a cross on our back. And so with the friends, I hurried around to the front of the Praetorium to see what was going on. It seemed like a circus. When we reached the front of the Praetorium, Pilate reemerged, leading this one who was obviously Jesus behind him. Pilate had his hands tied behind his back. And he said as he pointed to Jesus, "Look, I am bringing out to him the one whom you intend to crucify to let you know that I find no charge against him." And then Jesus stepped out into the sunlight from under the awning, and there was a kind of stunned silence for several seconds. He was wearing one of the Roman robes turned inside out so that the satin lining caught the glitter of the sun. And on his head was an ugly crown of thorns which they had pressed onto his head so that his face was dripping with blood. There was a shocked effect that fell over the crowd as everyone saw Jesus. It was as though they had all been collectively slapped in the face. It was like everyone was being mocked by what they saw. Pilate, the scribes, the chief priests, the crowd. It was crude and ridiculous. It was disgusting and pitiable. Pilate yelled out, "Here is the man!" And then the chief priests and their officials shouted, "Crucify! Crucify! We have a law, and according to that law, he who claims to be a king must be a king. You cannot honor Caesar and keep this man alive." And then Pilate said, "Here is your king. Shall I crucify your king? We have no king but Caesar." The chief priests yelled back. Pilate looked at the priests. He looked at the crowd. And then he looked at Jesus. And then he said quietly, almost to himself, "I wish to satisfy the crowd on their religious holiday." And then he bowed a kind of sick, gallant bow and walked back into the Praetorium. Jesus was alone, looking at the people. The people were alone, looking at Jesus. I felt utterly alone looking at the whole scene. Some Roman soldiers appeared from somewhere inside, and they stripped off the purple robe and pushed Jesus down into the crowd onto the street. As he turned, I saw the raw flesh on his back, and I couldn't believe he was still walking. A crude timber appeared from somewhere, and they forced him to stagger under its weight as he headed out toward the city gate and toward the place of the skull. The crowd was jeering, spitting on him as he passed. Some were even throwing garbage. I vaguely remembered that earlier in the week, right before I had gone into prison, the whole crowd, this same crowd, had been cheering him, had been waving palm branches at him, had been shouting and exclaiming and rejoicing at his presence. Where was the rejoicing now? I was feeling sick, and yet my mind was racing at the same time. Couldn't anyone tell that there was more going on here than the Passover execution of a poor country preacher? Didn't anyone know the law well enough to know all those passages that my father used to teach me from the passages of the law where we would know something about someone who was going to come and, what was it? Someone who was going to suffer, someone who was going to die in our place. Something about, yes, it was in the book of Isaiah, wasn't it? About one who was not fit to look upon. Someone who would be hated and despised and forsaken by men. Someone who would be a what? What was the term that old Isaiah used? A man of sorrows. And that he was actually to bear our grief and our hurt, to be pierced for our transgressions and to be crushed for our iniquities? My sorrows, my iniquities. I've had plenty of both. My life has been filled with disappointments, heartaches, failings, and wrong. Was that man walking outside the city gate to a place of torture and death? Was he doing that for me? Couldn't the crowd feel the anguish of his soul? How is it that I could? It was either Jesus or I who was going to be crucified that day. Jesus or I? I suppose that my sorrows and my iniquities are obvious enough to all of you. But how about you? We're in the same boat, aren't we? Or should I say, the same prison? Oh, you look a little finer than I do, a little cleaner, a little better dressed. But my guess is that in your life, you too have had your share of heartache and sin. You know, I really am coming to believe that Jesus who walks out the city gate to Golgotha is walking in my place. I'm really coming to believe that he's going to hang and die on a cross in my place to free me from my prison. How about you? What prison are you in today? Oh, I'm sorry. I know. I'm being a bit too blunt for this refined crowd. You see, I'm used to a rougher group. I'm used to the kind of people who are crucifying Jesus. Jesus, my Lord.